Welcome back. This is Conversation 11. Is it wrong to leave my church?
Doug and I have actually been hearing this question a lot, people phoning, just asking. It comes in different shapes and sizes, this question. Sometimes, am I in sin if I want to leave?
Well, people say, am I lost? Am I no longer a Christian?
It's deep-rooted in so many of us. I think we're finding church members facing this really tough wrestling type of decision whether to separate themselves. We're not here to say yay or nay, but it's because many of us have invested a huge our lives, really, money, time, energy. We've denied ourselves to really put the church often before ourselves.
Right, but people wonder, if I leave, what about my kids? I'm afraid the kids will be hurt if we move.
I think sometimes we hurt our kids more if we're not happy, and they see that. They feel it, if they can see us wrestling. And I talked to somebody just recently who was told if they didn't put their child in the children's ministry or the children's program, then they weren't saved. And their child isn't happy, and I think sometimes we're just like, put on your happy face and go into this class. We're not listening to our kids, but sometimes really church leaders aren't really listening to us, and we've got something valid to say.
Interesting how the kids can be a bit of a barometer.
It is interesting. Hmm. It is interesting, and we do need to listen to them because we can't always just be...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I heard recently someone brought up Hebrews 10:25, about let's not give up meeting together, and doesn't that mean that, well, it's wrong to miss church or miss any of church?
Well, I know that was taught. I mean, many of us grew up in an era where there was a church study and there was sort of a list of things that you had to commit to. And I think what I've realized over time, that's a list of things for a particular group or a membership, but it's not a salvation issue.
Right. It's hard. You know, even after all these years, I'm in the middle of my fifth decade as a Christian. The thought that midweek is optional almost sounds heretical.
It's true.
It really does. I mean, what was the Hebrew writer thinking of? Is he saying giving up meeting together means you miss a midweek or a Bible discussion? Because many people have 3, 4, 5, 6 different meetings a week. Are you violating Hebrews 10:25 if you miss one of them? Or is it only talking about Sunday? You know, well, doesn't really say, does it?
It's so interesting when we actually think about what does it really mean. I had this experience recently. I was visiting a congregation and they didn't take communion. And somehow it's ingrained in me that you must take communion. That's every week and that's a barometer for a church. And when I came home, I thought, yes, they gathered together on the first day of the week. But I think... really, if you look in the scriptures, they may have celebrated communion every time they had a meal together. That more so
there are different
once a week.
Opinions on those, Vicky. You know, I think it's a pretty good case that weekly communion was a mark of the early church. And later in the Middle Ages, it was like an everyday thing. It was available. But in the second century, that's where we get some strong evidence.
Right.
I think we've got to leave. You know, Jesus says, as often as you do it, which is tantalizingly, you know, that adverbial phrase, you know, as often as you do it. Well, we do it every third Tuesday, or we do it twice every day. You know?
I think what really we need to realize is that people recognized Jesus when he broke bread. And there was the community and the hospitality, and that they're communing together. And for a lot of us, I think we'll say a prayer before we have our food, but what if we actually brought in more of a spiritual conversation? We're getting off topic here,
yes.
But it is very interesting because that's something that's ingrained in me, and I will make a judgment based on that, but that's a tradition. Mm. It's not a bad tradition. There's a lot of evidence for it, but again, it's not a salvation issue.
Well, I mean, another thing I'm asked is, well, I found a great fellowship, but their doctrine's a little bit different than ours. You know, is it okay to go there if their doctrine's wrong?
Well, the question is, what makes me think, or what makes us think, our doctrine is right? I think...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if we're talking about, you know, the Unitarians, who a denomination denies that Jesus is God in the flesh, that's pretty basic, right? You know, 2 John 7.
Right.
But, yeah, that's a good point. No church has it all together. And this assumption that... we are the standard, we've figured it all out, is It's really arrogant, don't you think?
I think it is. And at the same time, it's not always a welcoming feeling. We can get stuck in traditions and we don't mean to. And as a result, that can actually push people away or not make us feel welcome. Because, I mean, I know for me, I'm sensitive to noise in a church because I'm deaf in one ear and I have different issues with hearing and understanding. But that will make a really big difference for me as to how welcome I feel in an environment if it's really noisy or the sound is bouncing off the walls and I can't really figure out what's being said. That does not make me feel at ease or welcomed. And so sometimes there are sort of physical reasons, not just spiritual reasons, why the fit isn't right.
I have an image of members bouncing off the walls. Very dynamic fellowships. But people are asking all kinds of questions. And Vicky and I think this is probably going to be more than one conversation. In fact, it'll probably recur. But this will be a part one today. And we'll give you a part two. All right?
Yes.
We're going to refer to some great articles at the end of the second conversation on this. But articles with titles like 8 Principles Before Leaving the Church You Used to Love. Or 7 Bad Reasons to Leave Your Church. This is something that is a refrain in the broader Christian world. It's under discussion a lot because worldwide, members are leaving Bible-centered churches in droves.
I think it's interesting for a lot of us. We tend to think it's one church for life. I'm not sure where we get that idea from. It's not necessarily in scriptures, but there's something about that. And I think it's to do with how much we've invested. And it's not just the relationships. It's a lot of the things that we have done that have fleshed. It's sort of been almost a skeleton, and we've been the flesh for a while.
The new ministry that we've just launched, Fair Havens, is intended to help people to keep perspective, to find their footing, possibly to move on to another fellowship. But that is not the purpose. It's great if we can make things work where we are. But we realize that many brothers and sisters just need to catch their breath. They need to be anchored in a safe place, a safe port. That's Fair Havens.
You know, we have so many storms in our lives, and there are times when we feel hopeless. And those times or we feel weary in our soul and we need hope. And I think it's often we find it difficult. Churches find it difficult to minister and to pastor to those needs. And we'll come back and challenge people on their commitment or their faith. And that really isn't the issue, but they're really just needing to get into a safe harbor, a safe port to be able, as Doug says, to catch their breath, get some food and some water, spiritually speaking, because they want to continue the journey.
No, but this is not a ministry for people who want an easier way or who want to give up.
No,
because we're pointing people to the Word. You know, and hopefully none of us needs to leave his or her church. It's ideal if we can work things out and bear with each other. But sometimes, right, even despite our best efforts, it just doesn't work out.
Well, I think because it's relational. And I think our relationship with leadership does play a part. And sometimes it's not just the member, it's the leader. Sometimes I know, I've talked to people where the leader has suggested, why don't you leave? You've got too many questions, or you don't seem to be fitting in here right now. And I will say you get pushed out of the nest of fellowship. And I know personally that's something we've experienced. It is heartbreaking.
Yeah. We're supposed to be welcoming and loving a family. But if you feel that, well, you're kind of a burden, it's kind of hard to stick around, I guess.
Yeah, or you can see people don't return your phone calls or they don't want to, you know, listen. I think leadership does have a part to play, and we're a collective body, so it does play a part for sure.
Maybe we could just mention a couple more things as we're warming up here. Church membership is not the same thing as being saved. Now, church in the universe, the cosmic church, the body of Christ, of all true Christians, yes, Christians are part of that. That is where salvation is. And when we're talking about membership in a particular group or local congregation or denomination or affiliation, that's quite a different matter.
But I think for a lot of us, we equate going to church as a requirement for salvation.
Right. I mean, we would never encourage people not to go to church, because the Christian life is hard enough without the relationships, that network and support.
But the truth is, for a lot of people I'm talking to, church is what's making it hard for people. And I do think some of it's because of what we've all went through with COVID, is that, and we've mentioned this before, that we all realized we didn't go to church services, but we were all like, I'm saved. And we actually enjoyed having a little bit of space and perhaps not having to drive such great distances and having a shorter, more meaningful service. And we realized the church is important, but it shouldn't be my life. Christ needs to be my life.
Absolutely. But it is interesting what COVID did. For some people, it became an excuse to just be nominally Christian. And for others, it was a time of very productive re-examination.
Yeah, it was a time of spiritual formation and growth. To me, it was a welcome break. It made me think.
Well, church membership is not the same thing as being saved. And I know we've talked about it in an earlier conversation, but there's still far too many people who think that the kingdom of God is the church, that these are identical. It's simply not true.
No.
The kingdom.
The church is a part of the kingdom, but it's not the kingdom. And no. That is really important that we have that distinction.
Or you could say it reflects the kingdom. But the kingdom itself is the living and the dead. And I don't know many churches that have dead people on their membership roll, unless they haven't updated recently. God was the king on his throne in the Old Testament, as well as now in the New Testament times. It's the kingdom comprises heaven and earth, that is, angels and spiritual beings, not just humans down here. It's past, present, future. And the head is the king. It's not a church leader, senior pastor, or CEO of a denomination.
Yeah, I think it's just understanding that the kingdom actually is much bigger than a church organization.
Much more exciting. Okay.
It's something to really look forward to, and it's our time on earth, but it's also what's to come as well.
And you know, one more thing we should probably say at the outset is that no one knows for sure exactly what the first century church was like.
It's interesting because the one scripture that we do know is about Paul preaching and the poor fellow falls out the window. But that's about the only reference we have to there being preaching on Sunday, right? Or at a service.
It's certainly one of the more memorable ones. But
it's colorful.
Luke does record in Acts 20 that the room was hot. It was, you know, had lamps, and he was drowsy. Maybe that's why he was sitting at the window.
Yeah, probably the ventilation was bad. I mean,
I heard someone recently say they thought Paul was not a good speaker, and that's why the guy fell asleep. I kind of doubt that myself. But anyway, we have some idea what the church was like in the second century, but there have been a lot of changes, a lot of development since then. But the first century, you know, do we really need to do it exactly the way they did it? Like, you know, meet before sunrise on Sunday. I don't know many churches to do that.
I think that we've seen more and more people wanting to be in small groups because their needs are met and they feel
right.
More confident. And I think it's just one of these things that the mega church was a phase in Christendom. And that's changing now to a house church movement.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the mega church movement, it's a phase. It's still going on, but probably losing ground to the small group movement, which is very strong globally.
Well, I think it became very much, church became a performance and people enjoyed that, but after a while, it's like, I don't want to necessarily go to a rock concert on Sunday. Yeah. And I think it's also because a lot of us are aging. What I liked when I was in my 20s is very different to what is meaningful now in my 60s. And a lot of our churches still want to attract young people, but at the same time, sometimes it's driving the older people away.
And maybe even driving younger people away because, you know, what I think younger people might like is not what they necessarily like, my judgment.
Well, we don't know. I think that's where we have to be open, but we have to look at the entire demographic of our fellowship.
So, Vicky, what do you hear? You talk to a lot of women on the phone, and I'm sure this is going to happen more and more with the new ministry. What is that people, they just want to unburden themselves about? What's affecting people the most?
I think people, the women I talk to, are very much affected by the lawsuits and the transparency with leadership about what has happened in the past concerning safeguarding of women and of children as well. And the fact that when they ask questions, either leaders don't know, or they're just seen as being a troublemaker, and you need to, this idea that you need to make leaders' life easy from Hebrews, and you need to not be a burden, and you ask too many questions, and so.
Well, let's talk a bit more really about that transparency matter. This involves. It's not just things that could be related to lawsuits, of which there are more and more, but a lot of it has to do with money, doesn't it?
I think it does. I mean, recently we talked to somebody that we know who went to visit another congregation, and they were looking to raise money for an expansion plan with their building. And it was amazing as she came back and just explained that they had the minister's salaries there, they had the expenditures there. It wasn't just put in a pie chart and generalizations. This was specific numbers.
Well, I know,
and she was amazed.
I know a brother who prepared a pie chart. I think he was trying to help. And it was quite accurate, but it really upset senior staff because it revealed that almost all the money was going to the building and some pretty large salaries.
Well, it was that administrative overhead. I remember years ago someone asking, when you're looking at a charity, ask what their administrative overhead is.
I started using that when people would phone me. I'd say, what's your overhead? Is it less than 10%?
And, we have a right to know, because I think that's what we're talking about. When we've invested our lives, it is money, it's time, it's energy. These things are precious.
Right.
And we want to know, is it... I think it's still good to give, but... I think we have a right to know.
And this, the point about feedback, in a lot of places, there is no real mechanism for feedback. And so maybe overworked, overtired church leaders and elders, they just aren't very patient. They don't have the time to give those answers that we need.
Well, I think it's also, it takes a long time to build trust. And I think that they often can, and we have to be careful how we question people. I think there's ways to ask questions without questioning them. But that level of trust and transparency go together. And it's like, do I feel like I can ask these questions? Are my leaders approachable? And will they listen? And I think leaders are in a tight spot, but they're losing their relationship with their congregants.
That's happening more and more. And again, in many denominations globally. What about being fed? People say, I'm not learning, it's not meaty, the messages are not really teaching me anything new about the Bible. I'm not growing spiritually. Yeah. How frequently do you hear that in your private discussions?
I think I hear that quite a lot. I also think that's one of my personal refrains as well. And I know I've been around, involved with church, and I've obviously been privileged to learn a lot from Doug, but I do want to hear something from the pulpit that's new. It doesn't have to be the whole message, and I know we've got younger preachers at times, but I want to feel like I'm growing and learning, because that's so important, because that's where the excitement comes. I mean, even getting challenged on a sin and the opportunity to repent and see change is encouraging. We because it's like, I'm moving forward, I'm becoming more like Christ. And I think I see how popular spiritual formation is. And I think these are wonderful classes, but people are going in droves to this because they want to learn more about Jesus.
Well, maybe we could ask this. When you're getting ready to go to church, whether it's a midweek service or even a Sunday meeting, how do you feel? Looking forward to it? Or is it more a sense of...
obligation.
Yeah, or dread.
Yeah. I think these are very real questions, and people do need to know that, well, leaders need to know people do feel this. But it's more, that sense of, am I welcomed, am I valued, that they actually, people want me here.
Let's talk about that for a moment, because, you know, as someone said, when they studied the Bible with me, they said I'll be part of a family, and one day I woke up and realized I was in the army. But the image of an army for the church, okay, I know there's some scriptures that say we're Christian soldiers, but hopefully we don't treat each other the way they do in the military. the church is a family. It's a, it's not a factory, right?
Yeah. But we all know, you know, it's interesting as we come up to Thanksgiving, sometimes families are a little dysfunctional. We know that. But when people feel that church is just, I know I felt this, when it's just there to get me to volunteer perhaps for another program or to raise some more money or to serve here, that after a while becomes discouraging.
Right. Yeah, I'm replaceable. So if I leave, they'll just find someone else to volunteer or to give her money.
Well, sometimes they don't want you to leave because they can't find someone else to do these things. I don't know, but it's that feeling of being valued and listened to. Yeah. That are very, very key.
Not feeling used. Really caring for people. When people feel pressured to participate, even if it's very difficult, maybe because of their life circumstance, that's hard. I mean, I knew one brother who had a high fever, big exam the next day, but he was forced to go to midweek, even though he had a fever of 102 Fahrenheit and really important exam in the university. But it didn't matter. It was a sin to miss this church service.
That's very sad when we're not taking care of each other.
I just hear so many stories like that. And, you know, as we age, do you really expect the same from someone who's 80 as someone who's 20? In one way, sure, we expect that we'll do our best. But to have to define that, to over-define it, could really hurt people, make people feel second class.
Well, you end up feeling a little bit like a number.
Yeah. Well, there are other things. And in our second part of our conversation, we will definitely share some more of the things that we've been hearing. And we also will talk about what to do if you feel you must leave, if you have decided to leave.
Or kind of what to expect, because I think that's what's really hard, is stepping into the unknown. But at times we're listening to the Spirit, and we've got to believe that God will continue to work with us.
Well, thank you for listening to our interchange here in Conversation 11. And remember, we'll continue this and conclude this in Conversation 12. God bless you. And thank you for your support.